I think for people who are emerging into this largely internet-based working environment now in 2020 and beyond, it's very important for everyone to have as diverse and varied a skill set as possible so that you can be prepared to take on a bunch of different kinds of jobs.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Chad Dundas is a sports writer. He has covered wrestling and mixed martial arts for ESPN, NBC Sports, The Associated Press, Sporting News, and now full-time for The Athletic. But like plenty of Montanans, he doesn't hold down just one job. He's also a novelist, a podcaster, and a promoter. Chad's debut novel, Champion of the World, was nominated for several awards and was the Boston Globe's best book of 2016. His latest novel, The Blaze, is also garnering accolades. He co-hosts the weekly co-main event MMA podcast and promotes live wrestling events around Montana. Today on Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we're looking at the most common form of Montana entrepreneurship, self-employment. We're talking with Chad about the business side of his career and how he balances the jobs he's passionate about with the ones that pay the bills. Chad joins us today from his home in Missoula, Montana. Production support for Can Do comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Chad, welcome to the show today from your home in Missoula, Montana.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me, Arnie. I'm excited to be here.
So you've been a sports writer for ESPN Sports, Sporting News, AP, and now currently full-time working for The Athletic. You have two acclaimed novels under your belt, Champion of the World and The Blaze. You have written graphic novel for World Wrestling Entertainment, or WWE, as we now all know it, on The Undertaker. And you're working on pro wrestling events in Montana for Defy Wrestling. But today we're not going to talk about any of that, okay? I want to talk to you about the business side of being self-employed or being a sole practitioner, or how you manage your career. About a third of the U.S. population now considers themselves freelancers or working and running their own business. And that's a staggering and growing number. So I want to talk to you about that. But firstly, I'm going to ask you, how's your family coping with the pandemic?
Well, you know, we're actually very fortunate, especially here in Montana and in Missoula County, where at least for the moment, it seems like we've successfully flattened the curve a little bit. We have zero active COVID-19 cases right now in Missoula County, which I think is a terrific place to be. Who knows how long that will hold out. But I think at the moment, I think we're all still practicing those social distancing recommendations, but at the same time, enjoying a little bit of what Montana has to offer for the spring. And my family is very fortunate as well. You know, we've got three little kids aged between 3 years old and 7 years old. They've all been out of school, so they've been in the house, you know, since the governor closed the schools, which, you know, I won't lie to you, makes it a little bit more difficult for my wife and I, who are both also home, to do all of our work. But at the same time, we really have been very fortunate. We have enough room for all of us here. We're all healthy. We get along most of the time. And so while it's been a very hectic time in some ways, I think we have to focus on the things that are going well for us and the, you know, good things that we have in our lives. And the funny part is, I'm wondering if my children will look back on this time as one of the great times during their childhood when both parents were home all the time, the whole family was home all the time, and the kids basically had to do some remote schoolwork, but mostly just sort of had the run of the house.
That's a very interesting perspective to kind of look back on in a few years to see whether they view it as a great experience or a pain in the butt.
Yeah. No, hopefully we all stay healthy and we're able to look back on it in a few years, at least from their perspective, and think, you know, wow, what an interesting time that I got to spend with all my loved ones in the house all at the same time.
Exactly. So are you currently involved in a writing project?
I am, yeah. My second novel, The Blaze, as you mentioned, just came out in January, and I got to squeeze in a little book tour right before the pandemic really took hold here in America. So that was fun for me to get out and, you know, see a few cities and meet some people that read the books. And since then, I've started in on a third novel project, which is another contemporary mystery and thriller set in Montana. And it's in the very, very early stages at this moment. It's still kind of forming, and I'm in the process of trying to work on a first draft, which is in some ways the most daunting and also the most exciting time of a creative work. So I'm just trying to get my thoughts and a first try down on paper here, so then I have a somewhat existing product that I can take and try to use to make actually good.
And so the pandemic environment that we've just alluded to a minute ago, has that changed the way you're proceeding with your writing?
You know, it's changed my day job as a sports writer for The Athletic pretty significantly. There, you know, for the most part, there are no sports happening at the moment, although the largest purveyor of mixed martial arts in the world, the UFC, is getting ready to fire up its business once again starting this weekend, which will be an experiment, to say the least. We'll all have to see how that goes. But in some ways, my job has only become busier in a weird way since the pandemic began, and since pro sports have kind of been on hiatus, we've had to get a little bit creative and you know, continue our writing workload, continuing to churn out content, and just do it in slightly different ways, do it in ways that are focusing on history or focusing on areas of the sport that people don't get the opportunity to talk about a lot as the sports are actually happening. So we've had to take a slightly more offbeat approach. So far, it's been pretty well received by readers, so I guess we're lucky in that regard. But yeah, it is somewhat ironic to think that, you know, my job has only gotten a little bit busier since the sports have been on hiatus. And then just in terms of, you know, fiction writing, which in some ways is complementary to my sports writing, but in other ways, I think is a little bit different. I've been trying to keep up a normal schedule, try to sit down and write at the same time every day, but it's been a little bit difficult just because of the family situation, having everyone around all the time. So I've had to learn to be a little bit more flexible and a little bit more forgiving of myself in some ways. When I don't get the work done in a single day, I have to keep myself focused, realize it's just a temporary setback, and try to get back on the regular schedule as soon as I can. So it's been a little bit of a struggle to keep all of the work going as it normally does, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to make the best of it, I suppose.
And what's the status of the live event promotion?
Well, that's been a little bit frustrating. Like, as you mentioned at the top, I work with a small group of people here in Missoula to try to do live professional wrestling events. You know, you don't get a lot of live pro wrestling coming through Montana. We're a little bit isolated. We're a little bit out of the way over here. And so starting in May of 2018, we started to promote events along with a Seattle promotion called Defy Wrestling that tours around the Pacific Northwest. We were sort of acting as the local promoters for them for one event here in Missoula. And we're doing it under the auspices of Treasure State Wrestling here in Montana. And as you might imagine, it has its own kind of ins and outs and ups and downs in terms of trying to find venues and trying to get talent and get someone from outside the state we can work with to bring live wrestling to Missoula. We had it set up that we were going to do another event actually this month with an organization called Prestige Wrestling out of the Tri-Cities area in Oregon. And we had to cancel it, obviously, a couple of months ago just because those kind of gatherings and live events are still shut down. So out of an abundance of caution, I think we're pretty much on hiatus ourselves with that group right now, and we'll just have to see how the rest of this plays out if eventually we get back to a state of normalcy where we are able to have those kind of events again. I think we will try to work with Prestige Wrestling to get a show here in Missoula, because I know that those guys were excited to come as well.
So, Chad, what was it like working with the WWE on a graphic novel about The Undertaker?
Well, again, it was a very different project for me. I had never written anything like that before. And it's more like script writing than any kind of traditional fiction writing. It's much more like writing a screenplay than writing a short story or writing a novel. And that was something that I had absolutely no experience in. So I kind of had to throw myself into the deep end a little bit to figure out how to do it. Luckily, the comic book studio that I worked with, which is called Boom Studios, which has the license to do all of WWE's comic book adaptations, was really easy to work with and very patient. They sent me a bunch of sample scripts of other comic books that they had published. And so I was able to go through those and kind of just familiarize myself with the form and the various things that you could do with it. And frankly, just like the nuts and bolts of how to put it together on the page. And so it started out somewhat daunting, but then I found as I got into it a little bit and I got a little bit more used to working with the form, it was actually a lot of fun just to sort of experiment with the various things that you could do with script writing and having artwork at your disposal, not just, you know, words. And then once they started working with the artist and the pages started to emerge, it was a tremendous amount of fun just to see the words that I had written take form on the page and be supported by all of this terrific art and to support that art. And so it ended up being like one of the most fulfilling and fun things that I've done. It was just at the beginning of it, there was definitely a learning curve for myself, all the stuff that I had to kind of catch myself up on to be prepared to actually do the project.
Chad, when you graduated the University of Montana with a Master's of Fine Arts and began your sports writing career, what did you know about running a business, you know, filing taxes, business record keeping? What prepared you to handle the business end of your work?
I knew almost nothing, and I continue to be a student of that game. It's still a work in progress for sure on that end of things. I would take it a step further back and say that when I graduated from the University of Montana as an undergraduate with a degree in journalism, I certainly didn't expect the world to change in the myriad ways that it's changed since that time. You know, I think people that I graduated with in 2001 still continue to underestimate how much technology was going to change the journalism business. I think at that point, you know, we knew that the internet was going to be a game changer, and we knew that it was going to be a player in the publishing world and in the journalism world moving forward. But I don't think anybody fully grasped how much it would affect the daily work patterns and the daily business of journalists. I think at that point, we all thought that we were going to go on to become newspaper reporters and that we would be either columnists or sports writers or daily reporters on the news side, something to that effect. And many of us did, as a first step, sort of go on to work at newspapers. But that industry obviously has changed a great deal over the next, you know, 19 years. And at this point, most of the people I know either make their living on the internet or have moved on to slightly different professions. So the world has changed in that industry a great deal as well. And I think one aspect of that is that instead of being a full-time employee, in many cases, there are a lot of online journalism platforms that pay their reporters as freelancers, which was not something that we were particularly prepared for as we came out of college. And so I had to have a crash course, not only in like the business of fiction and how to, you know, handle myself on that side and how the financial side of that business works and what the best way to structure my business would be. I also had to do it for the journalism side, where up until I took this job with The Athletic, I was also working as a freelancer. So for me, it's been a tremendous learning experience all the way through to figure out what all these different classifications mean, how to be a sole proprietor, independent contractor, and things like that, and kind of how to navigate those waters. So it was not something that I was prepared for at all coming out of school.
Do you have a mentor that helps you with it?
I have my wife, who has a much stronger business mind than I do and is an attorney and works in public finance, so has a much better grasp of business arrangements and business organization and how I should structure my business and like how to receive payments, how to get money going out. And so I work with her, and then, you know, I basically let an accountant handle the ins and outs of the actual business, because I don't necessarily have the head for numbers. I have the head for words, numbers not so much.
Well, even as a novelist, you do have other people that work for you, don't you?
Not really. If you are a really famous novelist like James Michener or Stephen King or someone like that, you probably employ a staff of like researchers and independent assistants and things like that. On the fiction side, it's mostly just me, although I do work with an apparatus at the publishing company. Obviously, I have an agent who works with me. I have an editor who works for the publishing company who works for me. And then they have a publicity staff and an army of people really who do the copy editing and graphic design and publicity and stuff like that. I guess I would say for The Blaze, which just came out in January, I did hire an independent publicist, which was the first time that I had done that. And it was a considerable out-of-pocket expense on my end. But at the same time, I do feel like it was worth it now that we've gotten through the publicity push for that book, because I think a lot of the publicity that The Blaze did end up getting was because of the team effort between the publishing company's PR group and the independent publicist that I hired. So that's just another thing that I had to add to my quiver, my toolbox, and another learning experience I had to have on this journey of you know, how best to handle that side of the business.
Sure. And as you were even talking about it, you almost don't realize that you do pay for a publicist, you do pay for a manager, you do pay for Putnam, I guess, who published The Blaze, for the services that they provide you. There's more to it than you just sitting all alone out there doing all this. Adding to that, you have the live events that you're working on, and they're going to require, you know, facilities and staff and all that to bring those to life.
Yeah, it's a heck of an organizational undertaking. I have a couple of partners that I work with on that live events business who handle most of the actual night of promotion and are a little bit more savvy than I am in terms of, you know, hiring security, hiring event staff and things like that. I dip my finger into it a little bit, and obviously I'm there to provide unskilled labor whenever I can to help move tables and chairs and set anything up that I can. As disparate and at times somewhat scattered business ventures it all seems like, I guess in my mind, eventually it does come together under one umbrella and feels normal to me, despite the fact that I think for a lot of people it would be a very different way to cobble together a living.
I think it is a different set of dynamics that you experience than most people that are even self-employed, because you're working for The Athletic, you're writing novels, you're managing events, and you're trying to put that together. And while the writing is similar, the event business is a whole different animal in and of itself.
Yeah, and some of it is out of necessity, you know, just because of the way, as I mentioned earlier, that the world changed between the time that I graduated from college and now. I think a lot of artists and writers and journalists, people that came out of a liberal arts tradition or out of a journalism tradition, have been forced to really diversify our revenue streams, for lack of a better term. You know, if you're getting paid as an independent contractor for your journalism work, many people aren't able to make a full-time wage doing that. Out of necessity, you have to diversify and become a jack of all trades. And for me, that included a lot of different things. You know, not only being open to a bunch of different kinds of writing projects, be willing to learn on the fly and kind of take on these new projects like fiction or a graphic novel, which I had never done before I took on that contract with WWE, or being open to various freelance journalism projects. And, you know, in addition to that, kind of like doing podcast stuff, which was not even really a format or a medium when I came out of college, but has been something that I've, again, taken on just as a way to continually diversify the ways that I make money and kind of put it all together into one cohesive lifestyle. And some of it is stuff that I do because I have a general interest in it and because it's fun. Like I would say, helping to promote wrestling shows in Missoula is something that we took on like more out of personal interest than anything else. And some of it has, in surprising ways, become a little bit more necessary to my bottom line as well.
What is starkly interesting about this, you alluded to early, which was when you graduated in 2001, most people who had a career interest similar to yours were thinking they were going to get a job working for a newspaper or a magazine, and you were going to have a weekly column. And that's not the way it is anymore.
No, it's completely different from that. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people are doing more or less full-time work for these big online platforms, you know, news sources that we all know. And many of those companies are paying a lot of their employees as independent contractors, I think more or less as a tax loophole for themselves. As an independent contractor, it puts you in a much different position than you would be as a full-time employee. You know, you have to handle all of the taxes yourself. You have to exist in this state of not really having any job security. Those contracts can generally be voided at any time. It's sort of the general normal state of play if you're a freelance journalist or an independent contractor, even though you may only be working with one primary employer, and you don't have the benefit of any kind of collective bargaining, you don't have the benefit of any kind of association or union or you know, working organization that would support you in any way. So in many ways, it's a little bit of a lonely feeling, but I think a lot of people have gotten used to it just because it's the order of the day and how that industry has changed in a lot of ways. At this point, I feel very fortunate to have come on board with The Athletic about a year ago in June of 2019 and have had a good time working for them over this last year. And I was thinking to myself as I took the job, how different an experience was, because it's been since about 2008 since I had a job where I was actually considered a full-time employee of the organization. And so when I went through to get the job with The Athletic, they had all of this sort of like corporate onboarding and various things that I had to concern myself with in terms of like human resources and all this paperwork to fill out. And it just struck me at that moment, like, wow, this is entirely different than any of the jobs that I've had over the last 10 or 12 years. And that this is an actual full-time position with a company where I'm considered an employee and not an independent contractor.
We're speaking with Missoula sports writer, novelist, and podcaster, Chad Dundas. Production support for Can Do comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. What has been the most difficult thing to learn or adapt to in managing the business end of your career?
Probably just the tax burden of being an independent contractor, for one. You know, when you have a full-time job, a lot of that stuff is taken care of for you if you just check the box on your tax form when you're hired, and then, you know, you don't really have to worry about it. And then when tax time comes around, sometimes you get some money back. As an independent contractor, you know, not only is the tax burden somewhat heftier for us, like if you work as an independent contractor, you're probably paying, you know, 30% at a minimum of your income back to the government in taxes, but you have to do it all yourself over the year. So you need to have this responsibility to take 30% of every paycheck that you get and kind of put it somewhere where you can't touch it, put it in a savings account or put it somewhere else where you're not going to dip into it by accident or out of necessity. And then when tax time rolls around, you have to essentially write a large lump sum payment to the state and federal government to pay your taxes. And so while everybody else is getting money back, everybody else is getting their tax returns back, you are depleting your savings to write this check to pay the taxes. So all that stuff has been a learning experience for me. You know, again, it's one of those things that I think in our line of work, we consider normal, that is just vastly different from how people who have traditional jobs handle their finances.
I want to get back to the confluence of the value or the role that the internet plays in your business, and also the effect that the pandemic may have, even a lasting effect. In your area of sports and sports writing, what do you think the lasting impact of the pandemic will have?
It's really impossible to say. You know, a lot of companies that base most of their revenue on advertising are having a very tough time right now, like a tough time that sort of hit them immediately. Another way, I guess I could say for the time being that I'm fortunate is that working for The Athletic, they have a much different business model than some of the other sports writing platforms in that they're a subscription service. So their money comes primarily from subscribers, many of whom pay for a year in advance or, you know, just continue to renew their subscription every month. At least so far, we've been able to weather the storm and emerge in pretty good shape. Now, I think that a lot of it depends on how long sports are on hiatus, obviously. Not very many platforms are going to be able to sustain their business if sports are out through the fall into 2021. I think that's going to create a very difficult situation for everybody, not only advertising-driven platforms, but also subscription-driven platforms. It's pretty easy to imagine that subscribers will probably cut bait if the sports don't come back at some point. The possibility is there that the landscape could change in a very dramatic fashion, at least in the short term.
For example, sporting events without crowds.
For sure. Yeah. That would change the bottom line of professional sports leagues and organizations. And, you know, would also change, I think, the general engagement from the audience that subscribes to the sports writing sites or reads the reads articles at sports writing websites. So at this point, it's very unclear. I don't think anybody could tell you what's going to happen next week or next month or next year. We are put in this somewhat awkward position in that we have to kind of, for our own livelihoods, hope that sports is able to return. But at the same time, you know, the most important thing is that they're able to do it safely. It's not going to do anyone any good if sports return and it's not handled correctly. And then you experience this second wave or spike in coronavirus cases, and then sports just have to go away again. Like, even though we are all put in this somewhat tenuous position of having to worry about our jobs, I think the most important thing is making sure that when sports do come back, that it's all handled as safely as possible.
As we all know, one shoe bomb led to the TSA and a whole change of how airlines operated. I think this will lead to another significant change in how airlines operate. And I think it will lead to significant changes in how crowd events are organized and managed.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the sport that I cover, mixed martial arts, primarily earns its money from television contracts and pay-per-view events. And that's somewhat been the order of the day in the more mainstream sports as well. It's hard to say how much that stuff will be affected. Like, clearly the bottom line of all these sporting organizations will be adversely affected if they're not able to bring in live crowds or if they're not able to bring in crowds of the same size. I think it's going to affect a lot of different sports differently. Again, I really have no idea. We'll just have to like wait and see how it plays out.
And many sports earn their money through the concession sales
for
that
sure,
take place
yeah.
at the events, like at a NASCAR event, for example.
Yeah, I would think that it would maybe adversely affect a sport like baseball a little bit more, where you're doing an event every day for the most part during the summer. So you get that continual turnover of live revenue plus concessions plus everything else. Whereas maybe something like college football or professional football is making the majority of its money from a broadcast deal. I think clearly that it'll hurt the smaller organizations more than the larger ones. You know, you look around at Division FCS college football, like the University of Montana plays, and you can understand, I think, kind of obviously how they would be more reliant on crowd size and gate money and stuff like that. And then as compared to like big time college football at Ohio State or Florida State or anywhere else, the TV money is so much greater. Maybe they will have a little bit more of a cushion. I really have no idea.
Yeah, the economics and how that all plays out is very interesting. And it has a lot to do with not just the safety and security of the venues and the status of coronavirus 19 or coronavirus 20, but it's how the public reacts and how the public wants to engage again after this.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes down to transparency, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, the general state of the world, which obviously is something that we can't control on an individual basis, but it's a feeling of safety more than anything else. I think the public has to be made to feel safe attending live sports again, and I'm not totally sure. It's unknown to me at this point, and I don't...
And it may play out differently in different sectors.
For sure.
I noticed a few days back the Venetian Hotel in Las Vegas issued an 800-point plan for how they're going to operate after they reopen. And my guess is that will change over time as well. But they thought it down to 800 points that they had to pay attention to if they wanted to see their casino business come back. So let me ask you this. Looking back on your career, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently, if anything?
Well, with the benefit of hindsight, I probably would have taken pains even before I graduated from college to try to create as diverse a skill set as possible. Again, since we thought we were going to come out of school and become newspaper reporters, many of us focused on what in retrospect turned out to be a fairly narrow skill set. And as it has turned out over the next couple decades, I've had to flesh out that skill set quite a bit to include various different kinds of writing, not only fiction and nonfiction, but also audio work. You know, in some places they want you to shoot video and take pictures. So I think for people who are emerging into this largely internet-based working environment now in 2020 and beyond, it's very important for everyone to have as diverse and varied a skill set as possible so that you can be prepared to take on a bunch of different kinds of jobs, just because, again, out of necessity, that ultimately ends up being a lot of what you have to do.
So in addition to what you would have done for yourself, looking back, what advice do you have for new sole practitioners, new self-employed people that are entering the workforce?
Well, especially on the liberal arts side or the fiction side, to try to learn as much as you can about the business before you're kind of thrown into the fire. I'm here two novels deep now in a writing career, and I'm still sort of figuring out how the business works day by day on a step-by-step basis. And, you know, when you get a master's degree in fine arts and emerge from an MFA program like I did, at least the one that I attended didn't spend a lot of time on the business side. We spent a lot of time honing our actual writing chops and getting ready to be artists and contribute in that way. But we didn't learn much about the actual tangible business side of things. And so in everything that I do, I wish that I was better prepared for the business side in almost all ways. So if someone is out there just starting out a career, I would do everything I could to try to learn what the requirements and what the ramifications of the like finances and business side was going to be.
Do you have a source that you would recommend that they refer themselves to?
There are a lot of great resources online at this point for writers. You know, people have websites and people have blogs where they talk about their own experiences and try to explain a little bit of how the business side of writing works. I don't know that I have one right on the tip of my tongue that I would suggest, but if you just go look around and try to find one that works for you, you would probably find someone with the expertise to teach you a little bit about how the business works. Again, we're fortunate we have all of this information at our disposal to try to figure out all of the things we need to know about how to navigate this environment.
Jed, it's been great catching up with you. I look forward to reading your new book, and let's see how this all unfolds and what the sports world looks like when we come out of the other end of this meat grinder.
Well, yeah, thanks so much, Arnie. It was a lot of fun.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Join us next time when our guest will be Joe Anderson, co-founder of Reflex Protect of Missoula, Montana. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.